another episode of the Access Vikings podcast, Friday mailbag edition ahead of Vikings at Denver on Sunday night football. We've got all your questions. Let's get to it. Joined by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune. Thank you, gentlemen. Got one from Rick in Ely. Wants to know, after two games with Josh Dobbs at the helm, when is it no longer too soon to start talking about him as the future quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings? Ben, is Josh Dobbs hashtag the future?
Boy, I mean, this question is going to continue to be there if he keeps playing like this. Yeah, it's going to be part of it. I think some of it will depend on their evaluation, because the trick with this is not just looking at the results. We have seen this. We saw this 6 years ago with Case Keenum. They have to believe that it's sustainable and can be repeated in their offense once defenses figure out how to take things away that he does well. I think that evaluation probably doesn't happen until after the season. That's probably like when the coaching staff all gets together and watches film back and does all of their roster stuff, kind of ranking players and comparing what's on the free agent market. They'll have a better idea probably at that point about how Cousins' rehab is going and what they think of the draft class. I mean, a lot of that is going to be what determines this question. I don't know that we're going to have a firm answer to it before next spring, because you have to figure out, do you think Dobbs is a long-term solution? Do you think he's a bridge quarterback? Do you think you can get one of these rookies in the draft based on where they're going to be picking, which probably isn't going to be that high?
Also, will his price go up? Yeah, will what he plays affect the market to the point that your evaluation matches the market?
Well, and the funny thing is that Dobbs and Cousins share an agent. So that's another dynamic to this whole thing. And Mike McCartney, Cousins' agent, certainly a guy that's done it for a long time, certainly a pro's pro. But he has been able to get good markets for Cousins and may be able to do the same for Dobbs. Probably not quite to that degree. But, yeah, all of this is going to be a factor. I think we've talked about it in concepts, but until you know dollars and cents and how they view things, which you're probably not going to know until it's done. Not to punt on the question, but that's what it's going to come down to. To answer it in as accurate of a sense as we can, that is how they're going to go about figuring all of this out, stacking all of their options, putting prices on these options. That's not going to happen for a while.
Grand Casino would like to take a moment and salute the true football fan. The passion, the hope, the anticipation, that incomparable feeling of winning. Grand Casino would also like to take a moment to remind you that you can find all that anticipation, thrill, and winning at Grand Casino. Grand Casino, let your story begin.
I do think two things. One, that Dobbs' style seems more, maybe repeatable is the wrong way to put it, but he seems like a better potential, like, long-term investment than Case Keenum did. Even though their stories are kind of similar, with kind of coming out of nowhere. I mean, Dobbs is very early in that journey, but like Case Keenum's year always kind of felt like a fluke.
And got a horseshoe.
He's got a horseshoe. They never even named him the starter, they being Mike Zimmer. If Dobbs keeps playing this well, you look at it and you say, well, man, the way he makes plays isn't just like, boy, he threw that ball up for grabs, and boy, the Vikings guy sure caught it. It was just kind of a little bit of what Keenum
there
did.
Was one of those last week.
There was one of those last week to Addison, right? But most of it has been like, hey,
his Cousins have one of those too against the 49ers.
He's making enough like good reads, but also making these plays with his feet where you're like, okay, you could picture how this works in this offense. The other thing I would say is, there's already, like, I've read this thing on Yahoo earlier this week, and so I pulled it up. Charles Robinson talking about the attention Dobbs is getting. Said could continue to draw considerable attention if it continues. What kind of attention? The kind that could position Dobbs as a coveted free agent this coming offseason and possibly the most coveted quarterback available, despite being slated to hit the market alongside Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill, and Baker Mayfield. I don't see it yet.
Sure. If Dobbs leads them to a Super Bowl, I agree with that. I think that that could be a thing. This all does get to the point of like what we were talking about. If Dobbs plays to a point where other teams are more enamored with that and want to pay more for that, the Vikings might be in a position where they say, all right, if they don't evaluate, evaluate him like a journeyman bridge the way that they would a Sam Bradford or Case Keenum a la 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is also interesting to think about this quarterback draft. So I'm trying to think 18. Who was in that draft? That was Lamar Jackson. There was somebody else at the back of it. Mahomes was 18 or 19?
No, 17. He was 17.
Okay, so yeah. Mahomes and Watson were both 17.
With Trubisky, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
I don't want the NFL to come to you. This is a great podcast.
Yeah, it is. Leave it in. This is interesting. Everybody's yelling at us saying, no, you guys are wrong. It was this
year. Anyway, but your point is about the quarterback. It's a class that there's projected to be a lot of potential options.
Which could depress the free agent market.
And it's going to change in terms of those options. It's going to change over the course of the months of who's, we know the favorite theoretically, but it's going to change in terms of who's the second, third, fourth favorite.
Yeah, I think we know the two favorites probably. Williams and May.
If you could sign Josh Dobbs to a cheap 2-year contract right now, would you?
What promises come with it?
You mean in terms of just guarantees?
Financial and otherwise.
Yeah, He's going to have to like.
Am I giving him the starting job with that deal?
Yeah, because let's say he continues this and they play winning football, and let's say they go out like Kirk Cousins in a first round playoff loss a la last year, he's still going to command a lot.
Yeah,
isn't he?
So I think so.
Could it be a cheap 2-year deal at that point?
Probably not.
Theoretically, wouldn't think so.
That's what I'm saying.
Do it now.
That's what I'm saying, but. I would do it if I was the Vikings right now. Like, I'm just saying, like, the longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to get. But the more you wait, also, you probably find out if it's a good idea or not. It's seven quarters. I get it.
All right, Jim wants to know, what's the news on Marcus Davenport? When is he coming back?
Soon.
Yeah, we did just hear that Marcus Davenport underwent a surgery known as the tightrope procedure.
He had a Siepert.
The high ankle sprain.
Watch out for that ice.
ESPN's Kevin Seifert underwent this surgery. Took him a lot longer to come back than Marcus Davenport.
Yep.
Soft. Christian Darrisaw played through a high ankle sprain at Virginia Tech.
Kramer's got a kill list on this thing today.
That required a tightrope procedure, so Darrisaw never took time off.
Yeah.
Unlike Kevin Seifert. So Marcus Davenport.
Who doesn't blitz enough. Brian Flores doesn't blitz enough for Kevin Seifert either.
Marcus Davenport is not going to come back this week when he's first eligible to return from injured reserve. He has missed 4 games with that high ankle sprain. Been effective when he's been out there. He just hasn't been out there for him. Hasn't been available. And so it's going to be difficult, I think, to say that when he's coming back. Well, good news for the Vikings is that they've been all right without him. They have had, at least recently, been able to produce with DJ Wonnum, Patrick Jones. They're bringing in, maybe Anthony Barr joins some kind of front for them at some point, but they haven't necessarily needed him. And Kevin O'Connell brought up the playoffs when talking about Davenport, saying that we hope to be playing some games that aren't even on our schedule right now in terms of him coming back. So who knows when that's going to be? I don't think we can sit there and say it's going to be next week or the week after. Earl from Costa Rica wants to know.
Earl from Costa Rica.
Yep. He wants to know. Hey, he says he's from Costa Rica. He wants to know.
Gone international.
What are the contract statuses of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell? And what do we think about potential extensions already for one or either of them?
That is actually a very good question from Costa Rica, Earl. I believe it's 4. I have not confirmed that, but that is my sense is that it's 4 for each. And if you recall, it was 4 for Mike Zimmer at first, and they didn't the first extension for him after year 2. He won the division in 2015. They gave him an extension right at the beginning of training camp in 2016. So if the Wilfs are on a similar timetable and they I think lined up Rick Spielman's deal at the same time, I would keep an eye on that this offseason. I think if this continues to go this way, and Kevin O'Connell, I believe, is 1 win from tying Dennis Green for the most wins by a Vikings coach in his first 2 seasons, Passed Mike Zimmer last week with his 19th, and I think Dennis Green has 20. So two wins would make Kevin O'Connell the winningest coach in Vikings history through his first two seasons. Yes, he gets one more game than either of those guys did, but on his current trajectory, he's going to do it in less than the 32 games that they had. So, yes, I would think that if this continues to go this way, and especially if they are trusting this group to make the next quarterback decision, which obviously they're going to be doing, I think the timing would be right for them to get that done this offseason.
Yeah, which made this year important, which has made going from 1-4 to 6-4 so far pretty important. Not like they were going to like get fired after this year, but like it makes an extension a lot easier if you go 10-7 and go 7-10.
Yep.
Yeah, and this regime has built plenty of trust, especially O'Connell. I think Kwesi has made some good moves too. I think we have maybe like looked at some of his moves early and maybe judged them quickly, but he's definitely filled some holes along the way here that have made them a better team. So I think they're probably trending that way too.
I mean, they're 19-8, and they have won 5 straight without the NFL Offensive Player of the Year, and they've won 3 straight with 3 different quarterbacks. I mean, all of these things would be things their representatives would be saying in negotiations this offseason, and I assume Andrew Miller will be handling those as he did the last time through with Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman. But yeah, I would expect that they're going to come in with a fairly compelling case to make. We'll see what happens the rest of the season and in the playoffs. But yeah, I would keep an eye on that stuff.
I think Sunday was one of Kwesi's best games in terms of his midseason acquisitions, Josh Dobbs and TJ Hawkinson completing passes to each other. Mike, do you have any questions?
I got a fun one from Alaska Pacer. He says, if Kirk is no doubt the nicest Viking, I don't know if you guys agree with that, but he's pretty nice, who is the second nicest Viking?
I was going to say, who's the meanest Viking? Like, no comment. I could tell you who it used to be, but I'm not going to do that either.
Second nicest Viking. This is a good locker room, I would say, in terms of just personability, you know, affability. In terms of guys being, you know, generally approachable and likable, this is a good locker room.
Yeah, it is.
When we talk about nicest Vikings, Harrison Phillips, KJ Osborne, Cam
CJ
Bynum.
Ham. Can't bind him.
Yeah, CJ Ham, Alexander Madison. I mean, there's really a long list. It's hard to, I mean, Justin Jefferson. I mean, it's really hard to narrow that down, I think.
Did you have Hawkinson on that list too?
No.
I put Hawkinson on that list too.
Yeah, TJ, Garrett Bradbury, Brian O'Neill.
Yep.
I mean, you could, if we kept naming them, it would be pretty easy then for listeners to figure out who was the not nice ones, because it'd be the three we didn't name.
I mean, and this is maybe inside baseball. Maybe people don't care. I don't know, but this is one of the easier locker rooms we've had to cover. I think when players are around, they generally are fairly thoughtful and insightful. They've shared a lot of more detail into how things go. And some of this is a reflection of the organization. I mean, players only talk to the degree that they think they're not going to get in trouble for doing so. And I think it's communicated a little bit differently from up top than it used to be. So that helps as well. But overall, this is a very easy group for us to cover. And I think, you know, is that a full reflection of what people are like? No. I mean, we've all done this long enough to know that you don't get a great sense of that about what everybody is like based on the snippets of time that we get. But overall, yeah, this is a pretty approachable group of players, I think.
It is. That was a good question. Hey, everybody. This is Andrew. Going to go solo for a little bit and answer some more questions. Got one from Ivan asking, is the NFC really that difficult? The Vikings would be in much more of a playoff fight if they were in the AFC this year. That's obviously, the truth. The Vikings are benefiting from a relatively mediocre NFC slate this year. If you look at their point differential, the Vikings plus 24 this season, for all the talk that we do about them being in one score games and not being able to blow anybody out. It's true. They've only had one win by more than one score against the Packers, the lowly Green Bay Packers this year. But
If you look at their point differential, it's still plus 24 on the year. That ranks fifth in the NFC behind the Niners, the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Lions. And that would be tied for seventh in the AFC with the Chargers in their current playoff field. And the Vikings also have differentiated themselves from the middle of the pack in the NFC in ways that really no AFC team has been able to do outside of the Chiefs at the top of their table. But the Vikings are 6-2 in their conference, tied with the Eagles for the most NFC wins. And no AFC team has six conference wins yet. And they all have, except for the Chiefs, all have at least two losses in their conference. So, there's a great point to this question that the Vikings absolutely are benefiting from that. It doesn't mean it's going to be any easier necessarily to get to the Super Bowl, just easier to get in to the tournament at the end of the year. And who knows from there, right? The magic of Josh Dobbs and where we're going from there remains to be seen. But I really do think that the Vikings are going to make a run. And I saw, I think it was ESPN or I wish I could remember. It was some playoff projections site that does the numbers on it and the percentages. And it seemed like the Vikings were the favorite to get the sixth seed this year. So the question might be, how high can they climb if they continue winning on Sunday night in Denver? Ahead of them is Dallas at 6-3. Ahead of them is Seattle at 6-3. Obviously they'll be behind whatever team falls into the playoffs out of the NFC South in that division winner. But the Vikings are absolutely benefiting from that. Let's go on. We got a couple questions about the run game. Colleague Ken wants to know about Ty Chandler. We got another question from Brian wanting to know, do you think the Vikings are struggling in short yardage and goal line situations because they are not following CJ Ham and Josh Oliver enough? Or is it an issue of effectiveness with those guys that they paid in the off season? I would say just from what I've seen and from talking to coaches, CJ Ham and Josh Oliver are not the problem. They've got an interior line problem. They've got a running back problem. Gone are the days where you had Dalvin Cook's speed, and maybe they should try to replicate this with Ty Chandler and some of the other speed they've got. But with Gary Kubiak, they could just pitch it into the pylon. The amount of touchdowns Dalvin Cook had behind CJ Ham on a specific play that was an offset I formation, just kind of a toss out in a sweep, and they were able to just block people up front and outrun to the corner. And the Vikings can't do either right now. And you saw finally after 10 runs of failing at the goal line, they were 0 for 10 inside the five, trying to get touchdowns this year, running the ball. They finally get one with Ty Chandler from 2 yards out against the Saints. And it was a trick play. It's a wildcat. The Saints, if you actually look at one of their defensive backs on the play side of the field, is looking the wrong way as Brandon Powell, you know, goes to block him and just kind of gives up on the play as Ty Chandler outruns everybody. They just caught the defense completely off guard, and credit to Kevin O'Connell, the coaching staff, for coming up with that play and using it. And O'Connell credited offensive line coach Chris Cooper, running backs coach and run game coordinator Curtis Modkins, for developing that. And they're just trying to find answers because they're just not blocking up front. And it's not Oliver and Ham, in my opinion, and in their opinions. I think personally, when you look at this interior offensive line, they have continued to struggle. And when you get isolated in one-on-one matchups against bare goal line fronts, there is no benefit necessarily of always getting a combo or double team block. You're going to have to hold your one guy. And the Vikings just don't do that all the time up front. There are at least a couple of Alexander Mattison's goal line runs this year where it's Garrett Bradbury or it was Ezra Cleveland or Ed Ingram blowing a block up front or a tight end on the edge. It really does seem to be some of their blocking issues continuing to haunt them. And then when you get into those short yardage spots, you're not catching anybody off guard typically. With running the ball up the middle, at least. And then when they try to get to the perimeter, it's getting undercut by just pressure right up the middle oftentimes too. So I think Garrett Bradbury's made strides in pass protection. I think you've seen some strides overall from this offensive line in pass protection, but they've just not been a good run blocking group, not a good cohesive group, and certainly not effective individually. We got another question here that I want to get to before we go on quarterbacks. Will the Vikings still be in the market to select a quarterback high in the draft? And if so, does the prototype change based on having a mobile quarterback now running the offense? We've talked about this, and Kevin O'Connell's talked about it, in terms of seeing that come to life on the field, that mobility, what it can do for them on top of their system. I think the direct quote from O'Connell was, you know, seeing what that can do for us on top of what we already do offensively, meaning schematically in the playbook, that mobility can just build off of and create improvisational plays that they just never had and will never have with Kirk Cousins, because he's never been that type of athlete outside of some rushing touchdowns in Washington early in his career. So I think, yeah, I think it's showing the coaching staff something. They've talked about that, and you're seeing them build around it. And they're going to walk the fine line of how much do you put Josh Dobbs in a read option when you need him to stay healthy, because the trade deadline has come and gone. I do think they're going to need to figure out some balance with that, because they're going to need it to be effective as well. They still need to run it. You see the third down against the Saints where they run the first read option for 11 yards. You see a late, I think it was third or fourth down maybe, where they try to run it with Dobbs and he slips when they needed a critical first down there to run the clock out. They're going to lean on that, and they're going to envision what that can be like with a full offseason to build an offense around that. So much of this system is West Coast and building the run game and the play action off of that. You can incorporate a mobile quarterback into that. It just takes a little bit more time in the offseason with a full install to actually put pair together your running plays with your passing plays, build true run pass options. I don't know how much of that they're going to be able to do on the fly. As I think it was Wes Phillips or Kevin O'Connell said recently, it's not fair to the 10 other guys who have been practicing our system to just change the entire thing, even though you want to do some of that to be more effective. But does it change the prototype? I think they've always envisioned this. The question mentions their interest in Anthony Richardson last year, and absolutely. We'd reported that they had been interested in trading up for him, but obviously had no shot when he goes number four overall. They dreamt about what that would be like to fit him into a system like this. So, of course, and I think you hear Brian Flores, you hear defenders talk about how important mobility is at quarterback because of how difficult it is to defend, both in the run game and just as you see it, as Josh scrambles for a first or a touchdown on a passing play, a designed passing play, and Kevin O'Connell is left with his palms in the air, because you can just make plays that defenses often are not accounting for and have a hard time accounting for. It absolutely changes things. So Dobbs has an opportunity here. And I think that's the thing maybe we in the media and probably a lot of people aren't talking enough about, is how this isn't just an opportunity for the Vikings and like, oh, do they have, you know, can Dobbs be the long-term solution? This is a guy who's waited till year seven to get an opportunity and then been kicked to a second team while getting that opportunity. The brakes are not necessarily falling in his way even as he's getting that opportunity, and he's still thriving. If he continues to do this, it's not an opportunity so much for the Vikings as it is for Josh Dobbs. This guy gets to go out and be a starter probably somewhere if the bidding war gets to the point where the Vikings are not that destination for him, or if their evaluation doesn't match that, as we've talked about. So I think it's going to be a fascinating next seven games of the regular season and then playoffs to see what direction this franchise goes and what direction Josh Dobbs can go individually as a guy who's earning himself probably quite a bit of money if he continues to do this. But thank you guys all again for your questions.
And then please keep them coming to us on Twitter or x.com, StarTribune.com. You'll find our emails and social media handles there. Until Sunday, please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com.